Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we are. It is the fourth day of December, 2014. We are live. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you go that's where you go. We don't even need the two. That's where you go if you want to jump into the chat room and join the live multimedia real-time extravaganza that is the conversation that takes place there during program hours every evening. Good evening, News Ninja Carol Baker. Good evening, Jeremy in Vermont. Good evening, John. Good evening, Kathy. Good evening, Lance. Good evening, Michael. Good evening, Ron. Good evening, Texas T. And good evening to our longtime, inveterate, indefatigable chat room moderator, Sparky, where I hope things are drying out quickly. Very quickly. As Sparky noted last night in the chat room, I am now a victim of climate change. And it's no laughing matter. I think by the end of things, he said he had about a foot of water in the man cave, upon which, if you've been following Friday on the front porch for very long at all, upon which you know that Sparky has been working for some several months now. Oh, I hope it's not going to be one of those kind of nights with the frequent mutings of the microphone and much sneezing. No, hopefully it won't be at all. So, bona fortuna to you, Sparky. And a little message going out to Sparky and, well, a little food porn to start the program this evening. Ferg went out and helped a buddy of his clean a deer today, and I don't mean they gave it a bath. I mean, they relieved it of its skin and cut it into its constituent parts because it's that time of year. And lo and behold, if my son did not bring home, for his trouble, a deer tenderloin, oh, my merciful heavens, you want to talk about good. The tenderloin of deer is tastier than any beef. It really is. It's meat candy. But the reason I mentioned it in conjunction with Sparky is when Ferg came back from his excursion, his sojourn in the West, he brought with him a canister of Pappy's seasoning. And he was tickled pink because he used that on the tenderloin. And it's yummy. It is really yummy. Ferg started a fire in the firebox side of the smoker and just did that tenderloin to perfection. So I usually don't like to eat before airtime because it makes me feel kind of slow. But this was irresistible. And, there's not much on this earth that's tastier than deer tenderloin. And Ferg did it to magnificent perfection. He's turned into quite a little cook. So I thought Sparky might be tickled to hear that the Pappy's got to work out. Ferg said, "This stuff's so good, I can just kind of, like, lick it out of my hand." No, save it for the good stuff, son. Yeah. It is Thursday. That makes it Thorn in the Side Thursday here at the Horn. We reserve Thursdays for those things from the right wing that just make us go, But then again, that often happens regardless of what day of the week it is. Okay. Thank you very kindly, Kevin. Stand by, please. Okay, so I've messaged my colleague Rick Smith, and hopefully the stream will be closed and or cleared in fairly short order. Kind of waiting for the chat room to let me know. Okay, so yay, we're live. Let's do this again. Anyway, just sending a message out to Sparky. You heard it, those of you who are listening to the podcast. You've already heard this, but the folks who are listening live hadn't. Ferg fixed a deer tenderloin on the grill for dinner this evening. And in point of fact, he used Pappy's seasoning that Sparky sent with him when he returned eastward from his sojourn in the West, and it was delicious. It was absolutely delicious. Thank you very kindly, Sparky. So it's 8 minutes past the hour, and yes, it's Thorn in the Side Thursday. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. That's always part of it. And I want to make mention of something because it will it's kind of a timely message. We try to raise money to keep this program on the air, and it works out to about $150 a night we try to raise. We raised $5 last night. Thank you very kindly, Thomas. But I had word of something today, and this is something incredibly special, and it's not going to come around again anytime soon. This is a special premium right now on the Horn, and you're not going to be able to get it anywhere else. I mean, maybe a few places, but not there. I talked to a dear friend of mine in the Northwoods. And, you know, the fall, or the late summer, rather, is ricing season. You may recall that we've discussed here from time to time the origin myth of, and you know, part of it I think is actually factual. It's not so much myth as fact that the people who are now those who inhabited the area around the Great Lakes got there by process of a long migration westward from somewhere on the eastern seaboard. And they said they were led to where they were because they had a prophecy that told them to go to where the food grows on water. And lo and behold, when you get to the Lake Superior area, it's there. The food grows on the water in the form of wild rice, manumen, if I'm pronouncing it right. And it proved to be life-sustaining and wonderful, and it is wonderful. And yeah, you can go to the grocery store and buy you some, commercially produced, that kind of stuff. It's not nearly as easy to get your hands on some that was gathered the same way that wild rice has been gathered in the Lake Superior area by indigenous peoples over the course of the last 10, 15,000 years. That's a different story entirely. Well, here on the Horn, you can. It is an old and successful harvesting method in which one goes in a canoe to the still water marges of the freshwater streams, lakes. And with a pair of sticks, one gently leans the stalks of the wild rice, which isn't even really rice at all, but a grass. Leans them over, and gently shakes the heads so that the grains will fall off into the canoe. And then one gently releases the stalks, and as they rise back to their standing form, some of the mature grains fall back into the water and repropagate the rice. See what happens when you try to combine crop and rice? You get Christ. Well, I talked to a good friend of mine today, and he told me that the new crop is ready. It has been processed in the same way it was processed for the last 10,000 years or so, and it has been parched and dried, and the wheat, or the grain, has been separated from the chaff, as it were. Carol's been talking about that. That's why the image came to mind. And it's ready to go. And he told me that if I wanted to offer some as a premium on the horn to people who wanted to avail themselves of it, that I could. So that's out there. It's not going to be here for long. And there's not a whole lot of it. So I thought about, you know, Sparky has been offering 1 pound bags of pistachios for a $100 contribution. And that seemed only fair. So there it is. If you would like a 1 pound bag of hand processed in the same way as it's been processed over millennia, you can have it. All you need to do is go to PayPal, send $100, and I will in turn have the wild rice shipped directly to you. I'll need an address, of course, so include that in your message on PayPal. Do that, and hopefully it'll start. Well, it's ready to start going out now. So remember, it's not going to be around for long. This stuff goes fast, and I don't know how many days we'll be able to offer this. So, well, let's put it this way. We used it in our Christmas feast last year, and everybody absolutely went wild over it, not just because of what it is, but because of the sort of cultural weight that it added to the feast, to be partaking of something that special. So again, the wild, and you know, if you want it, just let me know. If you want to help us keep all of this going and don't want the wild rice, well, that works too. We, like I said, we try to raise $150 every night. I thought that this premium might be a nice way for us to maybe get out in front of what is arguably likely to be a very, very tough month, because December's just always are. So, like I said, just shoot me a note, and I've already got my pound on the way. Huh? Randy says, if you really are live and the wild rice story seems to say otherwise, please. No, the wild rice story is an indication, Randy, that I am live. We've never offered a wild rice premium before. This is the fourth day of December, 2014, okay? So there it is. And in the meantime, yeah, 15 folks at 10 bucks, 10 people at 15 bucks, 3 at 50, 2 at 75, 6 at 25, however, but we try to raise $150 every evening. Let's see. Okay. Now, where do we go with this Thorn in the Side Thursday? And I'll mention the premium a couple more times during the program for folks who may wander in late. If folks wander into the chat room, you guys who have already heard this, you tell them too. Okay, would you please? Let's see. I thought in the course of examining or preparing for Thorn in the Side Thursday, I thought it might be, I don't know, instructive. Thought it might be instructive to consider just how many different theories there are out there for how to keep police from feeling the necessity to kill young black men. Because apparently there are, in fact, a lot of theories. And some of them are in conflict. But before we go into that, just an observation. And this is something that I propounded online today in a discussion with our buddy Michael in Madison. I noticed Michael referenced a song that was written by Marvin Gaye and recorded in 1971, and I saw that self same tune referenced by Charlie Pierce over at his blog at Esquire.com earlier today. And in 1971, Marvin Gaye was singing about trigger happy cops. Let's see. Even with my limited ability to perform mathematics on the fly, that's 43 years ago. And roughly speaking, 40 years is generally thought in some circles to constitute a generation. And it occurred to me that in many ways, and you can even, in a way, you can even divide that by two, and you still get the same notion. The killing, especially by police, of young black men, and it is mostly men, and they are almost always young, is a generational thing. And what I mean by that is that every so often, this culture, intentionally or un, maybe it's un, this culture feels the need to make sure that young black men understand very, very plainly what their position is in this deeply dysfunctional culture. Again, it was Inner City Blues Makes Me Want to Holler in 1971 by Marvin Gaye. Here it is, 43 years later, and the cops are still trigger happy or chokehold happy or all kinds of different, and happy is not the word, but you get the idea. And I couldn't get past the idea that this is something almost Spartan. You know, with every crop of new young Spartan warriors, they would go out as part of their manhood ritual at about the age of 13. And they would have to hide in the woods, and they would come and terrorize poor people by night. They were even allowed to kill the members of that class to prove that they were worthy to go forth in battle in the name of Sparta. There's a real resonance of that here. And as we discussed last night, and we're certainly open for conversation on this, but as we discussed last night, this is deeply institutional. Now, mostly, for the most part, gone are the days of water fountains and lunch counters, although, you know, those crop up periodically, too. But it is the institutional stuff that plagues us now. It is, for instance, five law enforcement members from, hey, look, there's Ohio. Five sheriff's deputies in Ohio are under investigation. Yeah, investigation. Sure, you betcha. For years upon years of racist text messages in Montgomery County, Ohio. Now, if I got my Ohio geography right, that's down in the southern end of the state, is it? Let's see. Sheriff's Captain Thomas J. Flanders and Detective Michael J. Sollenberger have been placed on indefinite paid administrative leave. That means they've been given a free paid vacation. They're sitting home and drawing their breath and their pay at the same time because of what appears to be their predilection for sending racist text messages while they are on duty. In other words, while they are in the pay of the people of Montgomery County, Ohio. You want a real laugh? No, there's nothing to laugh about in this. But you still, okay, irony. You know how we mentioned last night that you know, when cops do wrong things, there's a department that comes in and investigates cops within the police department? It's usually referred to as internal affairs. Well, Michael J. Sollenberger, Detective Michael J. Sollenberger, is with the Internal Affairs Unit of the Montgomery County Sheriff's Department. He's also a member of their SWAT team. Three other members of the force are also under investigation. They have not yet been given given indefinite paid vacations. The allegations are that between November 2011 and January 2013, via a report from WDTN, deputies sent racially hateful messages on their personal phones. Some of the messages were sent while they were on duty. Some of the messages were, in fact, sent to African-American members of the same force. The word, which includes two G's, an E, an I, an R, and an N, and is not ginger, was used a number of times, not to mention a wide variety of racial slurs and jokes. You want to hear one of the knee slappers? Because there's a bunch of them. I guess this is hockey puck time, huh? Duct tape. According to WKEF, there are hundreds of these text messages which they have obtained. In other words, every day was just another reason to get up out of bed and share racial slurs. And I got to be careful with that word racial, because we know, I mean, you know, I'm, and yet it works its way into the language, and there you are. One of those slurs being, and, you know, Jesus, I feel like I'm going to have to shower and bleach after the program tonight just for saying this. One of those slurs being, hey, you know what apples and black people have in common? Yeah, they both hang from trees. What bread? Really? Now, these are people who have a lot of firearms, high-powered automobiles, and never mind the high-powered automobiles, the high power of the state itself to dish out the enforcement of the law, which, as we have recently seen, also comes with apparently a self-perceived ability to be judge, jury, and executioner on the spot. The investigation is underway, and it will not be tolerated. Yeah, okay. Sure it won't. I mean, we'll probably take away some of their vacation days. Ooh, really? Then there was another officer who just tweeted, I hate. That's all. That is all. And it's a big enough nation that, and remember, hello, let's go back to early Barack Obama administration, shall we? Yeah. Remember when the Secret Service got busted for that very thing? This is an epidemic. This is a pandemic inside law enforcement. Is anyone in any doubt of that? According to WHIO, an employment attorney by the name of Jason Matthews said, well, it is possible that somebody could lose his job because of the messages, but I think a lot of it depends on the position they hold. Also depends on whether they're a private sector or public sector employee, whether they have certain protections such as a collective bargaining agreement or personnel policies that would protect them from being terminated. According to Sheriff Plummer, the deputies, when they were caught, said they were in shock when they were first confronted with it. But none of them apologized. Of course not. Let's see, here's another one of the texts. We stopped at a Walmart in Birmingham. There are a lot of black people in Alabama. It's all Martin Luther King's fault. Now, you tell me, how do you even begin to clean this up? How do you fix it? A generation or two generations ago, we thought, well, you know, there are some things that that time itself can only heal. Time hasn't healed it. It just hasn't. In a way, it went underground, and it's worse. Do you suppose on the civil service exam to be a deputy from Montgomery County, Ohio, there's a box to check, are you a racist? Are you a white supremacist? Do you have a secret longing to be a member of the Klan? Are you a member of the Klan? Probably not. Is that because the people asking the questions feel like that would be an improper intrusion into people's lives? Or maybe we just assume that, you know, that's gone. That's over now. It's not. Also in Ohio today, a report out from the Justice Department. Cleveland. It turns out that, according to the Justice Department of the United States, the Cleveland police agencies systematically and routinely engage in the excessive use of force. Systematically is a special word. It means that it's the way things are meant to be, that it is part of a system, and that these things are not aberrations from a more humane code of conduct. Ron in Raleigh with a note. Ron says, guess what? If you were to ask these assholes, are you a racist, they would, to a man, say, who, me? Hell no! The central problem is that white people of this stripe will not embrace their racism. The problem will not be solved until folks like this come face to face with their white supremacist ideas and thought processes. Which I think, Ron, means that it ain't never gonna happen. We're not gonna have a Truth and Reconciliation Commission with amnesties and everything like South Africa had. This country's too big for that, and as weird as it may seem to say this in regard to a place like South Africa, this place is way too racist for that. Let me share something with you, because this is emblematic of something that a lot of us, I know Carol has, and I know Michael and Madison has, that people have seen in just being out on the interweb tubes in the last couple of weeks. White denial, white privilege, white nastiness. I was absolutely blown away today. Okay, wrong word. I was deeply impressed today by something that Michael posted on his Facebook page. And it was a he said later, he said, I just saw one too many don't resist arrest comments. One is too many, and I just effing lost it. And for good reason, because that's now that the grand jury has decided to take a pass on indicting a police officer who was seen on video. Remember how we always all wanted body cams? You know, if we got body cams, they'll know there's going to be video, so they won't do that stuff. Well, yeah, they will, because there's always a prosecutor behind them who's willing to dummy up the process to make sure the grand jury doesn't indict. And then if the grand jury does indict, the same goddamn prosecutor is going to be at counsel table in the courtroom and will throw that trial and will never pay a price for it. And if at any point along the way the prosecutor does not do that, that prosecutor will not be prosecutor in the next term when she runs for re-election. Michael wrote, look, it all comes down to not resisting arrest. Don't resist arrest. Also, don't put your hands up. Don't stop resisting arrest if you've already given the impression that you maybe possibly were briefly considering slightly resisting arrest and then thought the better of it. By then, it's too late. Don't walk to the store to buy Skittles and iced tea. Don't use your hands to defend yourself if, while walking home, unarmed and on foot, a creepy cop wannabe stalks you with an SUV and a loaded gun. Don't play your music while pumping gas, especially if there's a white man around who might not share your particular musical preferences. Don't defend yourself. Don't commit petty misdemeanors. Also, don't mind your own business and don't obey the laws. That won't help it either. Don't do drugs. Don't sag your pants. Don't speed. Don't drive a car. Don't question authority. Don't question a white man or any part of the white power structure. They are the authority. Don't show too much deference to white authority either. That'd just seem fishy. you up to something? Basically, just don't. Don't be. Especially, don't be a black male American. Seriously, what were you thinking? This is America we're talking about, after all. Don't plead for mercy. Don't plead for your life. Don't expect to breathe. And if you don't like it, well, for God's sake, don't go looting and destroying property. That is a privilege strictly reserved for white college kids after the football team either wins or loses. It don't matter. Or for the white people of old-timey Boston, because never mind your dead sons, the ultimate injustice is having to pay taxes on tea. And while you're busy not looting, don't protest either. Don't call for justice. Don't call for unity. Don't play the race card. Don't make this political. And don't expect more from the police. Don't expect more from the justice system. Don't expect justice. Don't expect more from your country. You have a black president, for Christ's sake. Don't you think that's enough? Michael notes, for further installments, just look anywhere on the internet where white people like to troll. And like I said, there are any number of white, and in some cases even black, explanations for, you know, what's wrong with these here black people who want to tear up and loot and burn down their own towns? Let's start down that course with none other than presidential preferred Republican teabagging birther, deather, tenther, booger eater, bircher, libertarian, Republican presidential wannabe, Mike Huckabee. Once again, that right, there's the right wing outlet that involves the word news and something resembling the word muck. And Mike Huckabee is really upset with black members of Congress and players for the St. Louis Rams. He's really upset. Right? Pastor, brother, minister, Mike. Pastor, brother, minister, governor, Mike. Right? Yeah.
You have not been shy in offering some criticisms of what has gone on in Ferguson. Would you like to expand on some of those thoughts?
Well, first of all, I find it just incredibly dangerous that you have members of Congress on the floor of Congress holding up their hands in the hands up, don't shoot position.
Hey, I hate to interrupt Pastor, Governor, Brother, Minister Mike, but there was a time when other people said something like this, too. If you ever get a chance to tour the Capitol Museum, which is underground under the plaza in front of the Capitol of the United States of America, whose foundation stones were laid by slaves, if you ever get a chance to do that, you might, in touring that facility, run across a desk. The desk is an antique. The desk is the desk in the House of Representatives that belonged to one John Quincy Adams. And John Quincy Adams was a member of the House of Representatives and later President of the United States. Until the reign of error of George W. Bush, he was part of the only father-son team that had ever held the presidency. And gosh, wouldn't it have been nice if it had stayed that way? Anyway, the desk is historic, though, not just for having been occupied by John Quincy Adams, but by virtue of the fact that he rose from that desk to introduce an abolition bill. He, as a member of Congress, rose from his desk, being as he was from Massachusetts, rose from his desk to introduce a bill abolishing slavery. He was muzzled. He was gagged. He was not recognized. He was not permitted to speak. Because back in those days, the House of Representatives had passed a standing rule that no member of the House of Representatives ever, anytime, anywhere, for any reason, was allowed to question the institution of slavery. But John Quincy Adams did it anyway. He was, of course, roundly and soundly criticized, especially by people from southern states who said, "They're trying to destroy our sacred way of life." Mm-hmm. And when I listened to this clip from Pastor Brother Governor Minister Mike Huckstaby, that was the first thing I thought of. There's a man talking about how, because there's this thing called privilege that attaches to a member of the Congress. A member of the House and a member of the Senate are absolutely immune from suit, from application of criminal law, from just about the hand of God Almighty herself, for anything said on the floor of that body. And so, it goes to show that, like I said, these things are transgenerational, and these things are endemic. At this point in time, I think it might even be genetic. Yeah. Because, God Almighty, it'll soon be 200 years since that day when John Quincy Adams rose to offer his resolution and was muzzled, gagged, quieted, shut up, put down, oppressed, suppressed. So let's go back to Pastor, Brother, Minister, Governor Mack.
Would you like to expand on some of those thoughts?
Well, first of all, I find it just incredibly dangerous that you have members of Congress on the floor of Congress holding up their hands in the hands up, don't shoot position, as if to say that somehow that is going to get you shot. I'm going to tell you something. What gets you shot is when you grab a police officer's gun.
Really? Pastor, Brother, Minister, Governor Mike is going to use his magic white privilege powers to explain now what gets you shot. You know, grabbing somebody else's gun. Even if the person didn't. See, that's the important part here. Even if the person didn't.
Now, that is going to get you shot. I'm going to tell you something. What gets you shot is when you grab a police officer's gun and you lunge at him. And you try to hit him in the face. And this nonsense that...
Even if you don't.
Telling young people, don't hold up your hands because that's going to get you in trouble. And instead, I guess what they're teaching them is go loot a store, beat up a cop, reach for his gun, hope you get it before he does. This is not only foolish and dangerous, but it's...
Wow. It's now risen to the point where Michael Brown looted a store. Even though, just yesterday, I saw repeated again... The owner of that little store saying, look, nobody ever called the cops and told them anything had happened. Darren Wilson was just a mind reader. Okay, I didn't see this in the grand jury data dump. Did they include the audio of the of dispatch saying that a young man had just looted a store and stolen some cigarillos? I don't know. Message me if you know.
really on the verge of anarchy. And I'm just disgusted that you have NFL players, politicians, and others who, no matter what the evidence reveals, no matter how many sworn testimonies show, that Darren Wilson...
You notice he's disgusted. He's disgusted. He's disgusted with those dark-skinned people and the light-skinned people who agree with them. He's disgusted. He doesn't disagree with them. He's disgusted. He's sickened by it. He's tired of this uppityness. And since we didn't do a whole hell of a lot of prayer meeting Wednesday stuff, let me interject. And why wouldn't he be? Because he is a follower of a religion that has within its holy books statements from one of its holy men, Paul Saul, saying, and this is a direct quote from Scripture, "Slaves, obey your masters." He, Mike Huckabee, thinks that that is in fact, and I can't state this plainly enough, the inspired word of God. Because that's what his faith tells him is in the Bible. The inspired word of God. The literal word of God. Slaves, obey your masters.
You know, it's a tragedy that the young man got shot. But this is a young man who had just roughed up a store owner, just robbed a store.
Robbed. It's risen to robbery. First it was looting, now it's a robbery. Generally speaking, a robbery is a stealing, taking, and carrying away that is effected by virtue of a threat of deadly force. You know, like a knife or a gun or a pointed stick. Even assuming that it happened. No. Shoplifting, tops. But, you know, apparently if you're in excess of 6 feet tall and over 250 pounds, your very presence, your very being, your existential place upon this planet renders it robbery and looting.
And now he's going after a cop's gun, and it's a horrible thing that he was killed, but he could have avoided that if he'd have behaved like something other than a thug.
And there's the magic word. I guess Mama never taught Pastor, Brother, Minister, Governor Mike not to speak ill of the dead. Well, I mean, he probably doesn't speak ill of dead white people. I told you it was going to feel like a kind of a bleachy little evening. Yeah, I agree, Lance. Wow. But like I said, this is a brief examination of a bunch of clueless white privileged people and a couple of their accomplices explaining... why do good things happen to black people? Or why do bad things happen to black people? Good things happen to white people. Why do bad things happen to black people? And, you know, you may recall that from time to time we've had clips, not from his nasty old daddy, John Starve Hagee, but little son Matthew has entered the hustle now, too. And Matthew was in conversation the other day with a fellow by the name of Trey Ware. And they wanted to bring their massive powers of whiteness to bear as well to explain, you know, the unrest in Ferguson. I didn't say anything about putting the hockey puck away, did I? No, I didn't.
So the question of today's program on the Hagee Hotline is, how do you govern chaos? I can tell you from my personal experience in life, the way you govern chaos is you never let it begin.
Right.
Wait, his personal experience in life? I mean, is this something out of The Jerk? I was born a poor black child? Because, Matthew, buddy, your personal experience is worth precisely dick. Within the confines of this conversation. Yeah? Yeah.
My father, he had five children in his house. Five kids in one room is a ripe environment for all kinds of chaos.
Right.
You know how he kept chaos from starting? He never let it begin.
Right.
He said, these are the rules. When you break the rules, there's a consequence for the rules. Now, that seems like an overly simple principle, but apply it to this situation in Ferguson. You just mentioned having an area where there can be...
It only seems like an overly simple principle because it is one. There is a big difference. I mean, unless, of course, you know, one of those five Hagee children was being, choke-holded out of bed to go to school every morning. Or unless two of the Hagee children had to go and bathe in cold water outside behind the building, behind the house, while three of the Hagee children got to use the actual indoor toilet. Let's say the two blue-eyed children were treated as a subspecies of humanity. Then maybe there's some sort of correlation there. But no, I'm sorry. Don't eat daddy's special store of delicious gourmet lard cubes is not the same as young black men murdered in cold blood all across the United States and people beginning to be just a little bit outraged by it. God damn, the white privilege. I mean, really, does Matthew Hagee glow in the freaking dark? You stop chaos by not letting chaos begin. Well, what if it's not chaos, dumbass? What if this isn't chaos at all? What if the peaceful protests that we've seen in New York are actually the product of deliberate, planned, nonviolent petitioning of the government for redress of grievances? What if the violence, when it occurs, isn't actually perpetrated by protesters, but instead by agent provocateur? What if it's perpetrated by the cops? What if cops showing up atop armored vehicles with sniper rifles pointed into crowds of American citizens is in fact what propagates the chaos? But you'll never hear that kind of question come from Matthew Hagee because he is part of a religious infrastructure that tells him, as the literal inspired word of Almighty God, slaves, obey your masters.
A peaceful demonstration, but if that demonstration becomes anything other than peaceful, there's a consequence for breaking the rules of this engagement. Consider what we mentioned about the Ten Commandments. How do you govern chaos? Put the Ten Commandments into play.
Oh, for sake! Wait, okay, so there's peaceful protest, but there's consequences if that changes? And of course, nice Lily White Matthew Hagee is going to be there to declare what the consequences are. And now he wants everybody, really? Which commandment, dumbass? Adultery? Covetousness? Remember the Lord's Day to keep it holy? So, I mean, okay, if we're going to remember the Sabbath to keep it holy, does that mean the cops don't get to kill young black men on Sunday too, Matthew? Damn fool.
In the Ferguson situation, thou shalt not steal. What would that commandment have created in this matter?
Right. I don't know. Maybe you would have taken him if somebody was caught stealing, Matthew. Are you saying you want to take him outside the city gates and stone him to death? Because that's the inspired word of God, too.
One, there would have never been a reason for there to be an engagement between Michael Brown and Officer Wilson.
Right.
Thou shalt not kill. What would that do in a situation that we see happening with a young...
Wait. He didn't, did he? Yes, he did. He just cited, thou shalt not kill. Now, let's be clear here. There are several different versions of the Ten Commandments in that old book written by those Bronze Age people who were baffled by wheelbarrows. But there's no qualifier. It just says, thou shalt not kill. So who violated what, Matthew? Sounds like your boy Darren Wilson needs to be taken outside the city gates and stoned to death. Because that is pretty much the general remedy for this kind of thing. What, did you eat a shrimp? Outside the walls. What? Really? You're wearing a Dacron polyester blend? And it's the Bronze Age? And we haven't even invented Dacron or polyester? Outside the walls. Get a rock. Get a lot of rocks.
Man who was assaulted by a pack of teens carrying hammers that beat his car, and then when he stepped out of the car, beat him to death 20 miles from Ferguson in a community just outside of St. Louis. Right. You know, we're seeing these kinds of things pop up all over the place, and the excuse is injustice. The truth is we want chaos.
Yeah. Thank you to our dear friends at rightwingwatch.org for taking it for the team day in and day out and going out and finding this filth. Isn't it interesting how thou shalt not kill does not enter, how Darren Wilson doesn't enter into his rationale, his reasoning? Sheesh. Ron and Raleigh pointing out, I heard a couple of right-wing armchair psychologists say that Barack Obama is, in fact, mentally ill. Of course. You'd have to be crazy to want to be black and want to be president. On and on and on. Now, these two... These two were addressing themselves to issues in Ferguson. That is not to say, however, that there is not an available range of people who have opinions as to why Eric Garner had to die. Let's check in with Representative Peter King of New York, who once... routinely supported a terrorist organization, but shut up.
Let's get a different perspective. Republican Congressman Peter King of New York is joining us. Congressman, thanks very much for joining us. What's your reaction to the grand jury decision today?
First of all, the death was tragic, and hearts have to go out to the Garner family. Having said that, I do not believe, I feel strongly the police officer should not have been indicted. I've been following this case from the start. You had a 350-pound person who was resisting arrest.
So, okay, can we establish some parameters? Anything over 250 pounds and black and the cops can kill you on sight. I'm getting that as a takeaway. Am I missing something?
Police were trying to bring him down as quickly as possible. If he had not had asthma and a heart condition and was so obese, that almost definitely he would not have died from this. The police had no reason to know that he was in serious condition. I know people were saying that he said 11 times or 7 times, I can't breathe. Well, the fact is, if you can't breathe, you can't talk.
Unless the last words you're trying to say are, I can't breathe. Hell, go listen to the audio from the video yourself. Maybe he couldn't breathe because a heart attack was being induced from the compression of his chest. You know what the medical examiner found. Peter King, you're not exactly looking like a 98-pound weakling. What do you say we test your theory on you? Oh, wait, you're white. No, really. During the Troubles, this man was an ardent supporter of the Irish Republican Army. Terrorists. Now, that's without regard to what one thinks of the British occupation of Northern Ireland. But, you know, when you're into the business of killing innocents, it's terrorism, you know, for a stated political goal. It's kind of a classic definition, isn't it? No, really. Black men are killed because they're obese with heart conditions, and they have asthma. Not because they were put in an illegal chokehold that has been illegal in the city of New York with their police forces since 1993. A note just came in from Marty. Marty says, over 250 pounds in black equals death by cop. I'm in trouble. I think you might be a little bit sarcastic, Marty, but you know what? You may be. I'm waiting for some white guy to say, well, you know, that Garner case, you know, the bigger they are, the harder they fall. Tim from L.A. with a question. Why doesn't Matthew Hagee practice what he preaches? Exodus 20, verse 16, thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. The store owner never filed nor called the police against Michael Brown, therefore a crime was not committed, nor did Brown steal anything. In order to be charged with a crime, there needs to be a complaint. Even after Brown's death, the store owner never filed, nor did he admit that Brown stole the cigars. Therefore, Pastor Hagee is lying and violating his own God's law. Outside the walls, Matthew! Not me! No! Yeah, you. But of course, there's more. Oh yes. There's more. There's always more, isn't it? Isn't there? Yeah. Let's check in with one of the two front runners at this time for the Republican presidential nomination. Let's find out how we got to where we got to, you know, in Ferguson. Do not put the hockey pucks away. Not kidding. This is real. Oh, Dr. Ben Carson, white courtesy phone.
And certainly in a lot of our inner cities, particularly in the black inner cities, where 73% of the young people are born out of wedlock, the majority of them have no father figure in their life. Usually the father figure is where you learn how to respond to authority. So now you become a teenager, you're out there, you have real...
Wait, stop. Usually a father figure is how you learn to respond to authority. Is it just me, or does that have a kind of ominous ring to it? Yeah, wait till your daddy gets home. He'll beat you real good. Because if one's wielding of authority is of a nonviolent nature, Why does one have to learn that from a father figure? That's some deeply embedded crap, isn't it? What'd your daddy do to you, Ben? He take the strap to you, did he, Ben? Is that where you learned about authority, Ben? Oh, but no. One of the two front runners for the Repiglican presidential nomination in 2016, he's got a lot more to say on this. Oh, I wouldn't kid you.
Majority of them have no father figure in their life. Usually the father figure is where you learn how to respond to authority. So now you become a teenager, you're out there, you have really no idea how to respond to authority. You eventually run into the police or you run into someone else in the neighborhood who also doesn't know how to respond, but who's better than you are, and you get killed.
Mm-hmm.
Or you end up in the penal system. And, you know, that happens dozens of times every single day in America. And if the so-called leaders were really interested in the community, they would be trying to deal with that problem.
I'm telling you, take a bite down hard on the hockey puck and double-check the sticky of the duct tape, okay? This is about to get a lot worse because even though it's the absence of father figures, we are talking about a right-wing birther, deather, tenther, bagger, booger, eater, bircher, libertarian, Republican in Ben Carson here. And that means we all know what that means. Sooner or later, well, it turns into a line from a very famous Jimmy Buffett song.
Because that's happening every single day.
Well, Dr. Carson, it's happening every day in all homes, too.
Right.
You know, not just in the lower middle class African American homes. I mean, I see it every day in my.
I love it when bleach blonde white ladies start talking about lower middle class African American homes. Isn't it just sweet?
Husband and I talk about the importance of teaching our children not only biblical principles, but one of those being to respect authority, because you're doing them a favor. When they learn to go, okay, that person's an authority over me, our five-year-old knows to say, yes, ma'am, yes, sir, and to really treasure that. And I've been aghast, especially at this generation, the sense of entitlement that just dominates all that they are. It seems like it's stronger than it's ever been. This is who I am, and let me tell you who I am, and I don't want to have to work for it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to have to pay a...
Hey, wow, this woman's really an expert. Who the are you, lady? oh, well, this is American Family Radio, you know, brought to you by the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi, Stan. This is one of the colleagues of that proud son of Stanford, Brian Fisher. This is Lauren Kitchen Stewards. And she, of course, is all worried about a sense of entitlement. Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's back up just a hair.
Every role knows to say, yes, ma'am, yes, sir, and to really treasure that. And I've been aghast.
Wait, okay, that's where I was going. My five-year-olds know to say yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am, and yes, sir, and no, sir. And, okay, Lori, how did you teach him to do that? How many times did you hit him? How many times did you stuff a bar of soap in their mouth? How many times did you yell at him? That's not yes, that's not yeah, that's yes, ma'am! Huh? How deeply do you have to scar a five-year-old to get them all good and yes, ma'am, to no, ma'am? And does it come out as yes, mom? Or is that what you expect from those lower middle class African American families? Yeah, the step off rule and the eyeball rule in your home too, Lori Kitchen Stewards? Really? Kitchen Stewards? Yeah, really? Goddess of irony never sleeps, not even so much as a yawn. Many times I think about what a forward-thinking individual my father was. Because I grew up in a generation where it was deemed to be just right and proper to teach the little ones to say yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am, and yes, sir, and no, sir. You know what my father was hung up on? Yes and no. That's what I was taught as a child. Don't say yeah. Don't say no or nope. Say yes or no. And of course, there were no beatings involved. It was a calm and a rational explanation. Go through this life, son, so that people will know exactly what you mean. Leave no room for doubt. If someone asks you a question to which the answer is yes, say yes. If the answer is no, say no. Don't leave any room to be misinterpreted. And I remember hearing my father say, I despise the idea of children being taught yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am, and yes, sir, and no, sir, because this is not the military. And he went on to say that the sirs and the ma'ams were terms of enforced respect where none had yet been earned. Oh, well, back to Susan Kitchen Stewards. Lauren Kitchen Stewards. Lauren Kitchen Stewards.
Yes, especially at this generation, the sense of entitlement that just dominates all that they are. It seems like it's stronger than it's ever been. This is who I am, and let me tell you who I am, and I don't want to have to work for it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to have to pay a price for, climbing the ladder of success.
Right.
I mean, it's really frightening, and we can make a difference in our own home every single day with our children, no matter what background we're from, no matter what our socioeconomic is.
Well, I think a lot of it really got started in the 60s. With the me generation.
Mm.
Oh, we're going to have a little bit of Ben Carson hippie punching now. That's so nouveau of you, Dr. Ben. Only, they call it the me generation because they don't like to say the H word, hippies. Right? Yeah, sure. Oh. Okie dokie. Let's see what else he's got. Because like I said, it's got to be somebody's fault.
Exactly.
What's in it for me, I hate to say it, but a lot of it had to do with the women's lib movement.
Oh, he scores! But I know, it's all some woman's fault. You got that, women folks out there in the Horn Family Commune congregation? Yeah. Women's liberation is at fault. Women's liberation is at fault for Ferguson. So thus far we've got obesity, asthma, heart disease, women's liberation, hippies, Ten Commandments, chaos, football players, members of Congress. None of these people can find their way to think that maybe there was another way this is sub basement stuff. Not one of these fools, these right wing tools, is able to reach the conclusion The problem is violence itself. That it is possible to resolve conflicts nonviolently. I mean, we're not talking about a gangland shootout with bullets flying across the street from the Biograph Theater, right? We're talking about interpersonal interactions of a one-on-one, or in the case of Eric Garner, five-on-one, or in the case of Cleveland, two-on-one. I mean, Jesus Christ, in Cleveland, Ohio, they cannot deal with a 12-year-old black young man, a boy, two armed-to-the-teeth police officers cannot deal with a 12-year-old black boy without blowing his head off. And therein, perhaps, lies one of the essential problems with all of this. The white authority structure appears to be grounded upon enforcement of authority by means of the use of violence. Tim from L.A. With a quote. Remember former LAPD Chief Daryl Gates' comment? It seems to me that we may be finding that in some blacks, when the chokehold is applied, the veins or the arteries do not open as fast as they do on normal people. You think the NYPD would know this? I mean, they're both racist organizations. Oh, and chokeholds are not banned in Los Angeles, by the way. It's now use of force, which 99.9% of the time, cops in L.A. still will not use, or they run the risk of getting fired or end up in jail or prison. Do you see a pattern of violence in New York, more so than the LAPD? I do. My friends from the LAPD were shocked by the death of Eric Garner. No, really. Yeah, shocked. Marty pointing out, oh, I wish I could remind Dr. Carson about the fact that without that me generation, he wouldn't be talking on the radio. Not only would he not be talking on the radio, Marty, he wouldn't be a world-renowned, respected brain surgeon. You know? Because, I mean, it was that me generation that was marching in places like Montgomery and the parts elsewhere. Up to our eyeballs and assholes, aren't we? All right, one more. Compiling the list of things that caused Ferguson. And by extension, the Eric Garner Staten Island case, too. Enter Alan Keyes. He knows whose fault it is. Oh, yeah. Alan Keyes, I mean, he knows all, tells all.
Now, what we need to discuss has nothing to do with race. It has to do with how we behave as Americans. And I think that when you get into a situation where folks misbehave, you have to rely on police officers acting responsibly to deal with it.
It's not about race because it's not about race. Right?
And we ought to react to this not as blacks and whites, but as Americans who would like to see decent security and order in our communities and who want to do so on the basis of facts, not ideology, not agendas that are seeking to impose this or that kind of political situation on the country.
For the evening's pool, be watching your clock, okay? Because we're about to find out whose fault this all is.
Frankly, think Obama is exploiting this situation by way of threatening the Republicans, saying that there will be massive unrest if they don't knuckle under to his will, and trying to prove that he's got the power to turn our cities into powder kegs that will explode in the face of anybody who opposes him. It's a Hitlerian tactic.
Okay, who had 7:22 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for the first mention of Hitler on tonight's program?
Like think we ought not to, as Americans, respond to it with anything but contempt.
So Ferguson and the out-of-control killing of young black men by armed-to-the-teeth police officers is the fault of Hitlerian Barack Obama. Oddly enough, for this Thorn in the Side Thursday, we have hardly even gotten started. Because there is more. Let's check in with representing Matt Salmon. Or does he pronounce the L? Is it the Swiss pronunciation? I don't know. But the same guy who was interviewing... which one was it? I'm running out of wing nuts. J.D. Hayworth from over there at Newsmuck, used to be a member of Congress. Representing Matt Salmon, don't know, Repig Lickin from Arizona, also has an answer. Well, I mean, it's not really so much of an answer. It's just he, like Reverend Pastor Governor Brother Mike Huckstrebe, is just disgusted.
Be remiss if we did not begin our time together, Matt, by getting your reaction to the grand jury's decision there in New York.
You know, the grand jury weighs all of the evidence in these kinds of cases. And
Lie.
You'll have to remind me. I know you know this stuff like the back of your hand, but who was the prosecutor that once said you could indict a ham sandwich?
Well, I think there have been numerous prosecutors.
In other words,
said
he doesn't
I've
know.
Heard that from any number of lawyers that fact is true.
The process of indicting is a
judge.
Pretty easy one, and so the fact that this officer wasn't indicted speaks volumes that it was clear to the grand jury that he operated under the scope of his authority, and he did, you know, what any reasonable officer would have done to subdue.
And once again, the officer was allowed to testify before the grand jury. You can go through, I would say, 99.99% of cases presented to grand juries in New York City alone in which the defendant is a person of color, and you will not find an instance in those 99.9% of the cases. You will not find an instance where the black defendant was invited to come and testify before the grand jury and say, no, it's all just a misunderstanding.
Somebody that was resisting arrest, and all I'm saying is that is the process by which our country operates, and justice was served. That's the way the process works, I can't really expound on it anymore, but to constantly be...
Justice was served. Now, you can check the earnestness or the candor of a statement like that by a very simple little thought experiment. Ask yourself, what would this guy be saying if Darren Wilson and Officer Pantoleo had been indicted by the grand jury? You would be dealing with white outrage. Our police cannot any longer protect our communities. That Obama has imposed a Hitlerian threat upon...
You know, bringing up allegations of, profiling or whatever the case may be, when officers have a pretty darn tough job...
It's a darn tough job.
...to secure the streets as it is, and then they are exonerated by their peers who look at all of the evidence... instead of those that that profit off of perpetuating these kinds of schisms in our society.
Oh, by the way, and because this is video and not just audio when I'm looking at it, has anyone noticed that one of the things that did happen right before Officer Pantoleo decided to summarily execute Eric Garner? Has anybody noticed what Eric Garner did? Anybody? He put his hands in the air. It's right there on the video. He puts his hands in the air. He doesn't reach out. He doesn't try to grab anyone. He puts his hands up. Just notice that.
Like, you know, like Al Sharpton and those guys that are always constantly out there, you know, trying to make something that doesn't exist. Look, is there still racism in our country? Yes, there is. Is it a lot better than it's been in our lifetime? Absolutely it is.
Said the white guy. Because, see, I'm guessing Mrs. Garner doesn't think a hell of a lot of progress has been made from Selma to Staten Island. I'm guessing that being able to maybe drink, if she were to travel down south, being able to drink from the same water fountains as white people isn't the signal achievement that Representative Salmon thinks that it is. And, wow, he really hates Al Sharpton, doesn't he? Well, he hates anybody who makes those people, those blah people, get all uppity.
But I don't believe, you know, that this officer operated incorrectly, and that's because the grand jury decided not to indict. That's the way the process works.
No, that's the way the process doesn't work. Notice the operative use of the verb believe. He believes. He doesn't know, and he goddamn sure doesn't think. He believes. Oh, come on. Why not? One more. Shall we? Or is... Let's hear from another bleach blonde white lady. Also, of course, with the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi, Stan. Colleague of helmet-haired, proud son of Stanford, Brian Fisher. This would be Sandy Rios. And she knows whose fault the Eric Garner killing really was.
So it's another tool, let's say it's another vehicle, for the really horrendous agitators among us to create, to make the situation as bad as possible.
Really? What? Sherman, set the Wayback Machine for Tuscaloosa, 1960. Because she'd be, Sandy Rios would be just perfectly at home. It's the agitators!
I do find myself, you know, who could watch that video and be happy? Or, you know, it's sad to see Eric Garner get arrested like that. I don't know if you saw the...
No, honey, he didn't get arrested. He got killed! Sorry for the honey.
Extended video, but he did not... He resisted arrest again. I don't...
With his arms in the air, Sandy Rios of the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi, Stan... With his hands in the air, he resisted arrest. He had his hands in the air when Officer Pantoliano put the chokehold on him. So, you know, the slogans are going to have to get longer. It's not, no longer is it hands up, don't shoot. It's also hands up, don't choke.
Understand, you know, I remember when my son was little.
What'd you choke him? No, sorry.
He threw a rock at a bus, it seems to me. And the police saw...
Oh, do you hear her laugh? Yeah, she's white, because her little son threw a rock at a bus, and the police showed up, and, oh, well, you know, they didn't choke him to death.
Police saw him, and it told him to stop, and Jeremy, I think he was probably about 8 years old, and he ran off...
He is so going to hate his mama.
All the way home, and then my doorbell rang, and there was a policeman at my door.
How about that? The goddamn doorbell rang. They didn't come through with a fucking no-knock warrant.
And, you know, serious as a heart attack. Is your son here? And you know, yes, he's here. Anyway, then he lectured my son on not running from the police. And
oh, he lectured his her son on not running from the police. He didn't choke him to death.
You must cooperate. You must stand. You must cooperate. You must not fight back.
Son, you're white. You have white privilege. We're not going to kill you on sight for disobeying us. So, you know, do the white thing, son. Stand there, answer our questions, don't run from us, and, you know, because we might have to chase you down or come to your house or something or knock politely on the door or perhaps ring the bell because you're white.
You have to do what they say, even if they don't understand in the moment all the circumstances. Maybe you can't explain to them why it is things are the way they are, but you must respect them and you must stop and obey them. So why Eric didn't do that, I don't know.
Wait a minute,
he'd been arrested. He had been arrested 32 times prior to that. So
hold the darn phone. Her son doesn't understand why it's wrong to throw rocks at school buses. Because I'd kind of like to back up and examine that for a minute. Now, this woman is a follower of Christ Jesus. What kind of mother is she? I mean, does everything have to be in the Ten Freaking Commandments? Does it have to say, thou shalt not chuck a rock at the school bus? Because I don't think there's anything in the Ten Commandments that covers chucking rocks at school buses. But wait, I interrupted. Because Sandy Rios is getting ready to sleaze the dead. And you just don't want to miss that.
He certainly up and obey them. So why Eric didn't do that, I don't know. And they said he'd been arrested. He had been arrested 32 times prior to that. So he certainly knew the drill.
I guess they were buddies. I guess Mr. Garner came over for, like, you know, cotillions and shit. You notice that? She calls him Eric. No, I guess, you know, Eric, I mean, but he didn't... Really? You're on a first-name basis, are you, Sandy? You see, when I call you Sandy, it's a term of non-respect. Man's dead, been dead for months, and can't even earn from this pasty-faced, doughy lady the term Mr. Garner. Eric. Eric, bring me another flaming rum punch. Well, he'd been arrested 32 times. Well, obviously, Sandy, that means he deserved to die.
It's very, very sad, and it's really sad to know now that there will be, this will be an occasion for more violence and more of the evil, really, the evil that loves this stuff and comes in and loves to stir it up.
Wow. Wait. So a New York police officer who chokes a man to death, who has his hands in the air, is not evil. But protesting the choking death of a man who had an unarmed black man who had his hands in the air by a police officer who was armed to the goddamn teeth, protesting that is evil. Is there anybody left in the Horn Family Commune congregation who is left without an understanding of why I despise these evangelical religion industry fundamentalist Christians? They profess to worship as their avatar, a savior, who was murdered by the first century of the common era equivalent of the police, and they cannot find it in their hearts to feel any sympathy whatsoever for a man whose skin tone is a hell of a lot closer to Jesus than Sandy Rios's is. At all. And she ain't done.
narrative and make a situation worse than it already is. It does remind me a lot of, I have mentioned that Mao Zedong had a, I read a biography of Mao Zedong a number of years ago, which is, he was the, you know, great dictator of China, and Mao wasn't always, you know, he came up from the ranks, and he studied with Western communists at the time, and this would have been in the early 1900s, European communists, studied at their feet, and one of the things he learned to do was to agitate and to make matters worse. If there was a natural disaster, make it seem worse, stir it up, upset people, appeal to their grievances, set people...
Don't they have to have grievances before you can appeal to them? Yeah.
People against each other. And then march in and take control. You know, pose as though you have an answer. Even if they don't know what the answer is, you pose as though you have one. So that's what the evil, dark center of the left does, and that's certainly what they're going to do.
Don't you just cherish the way she equates evil and dark? The only thing missing was --skinned. See, sometimes it would be kind of cool if this was video instead of audio only, because you could see me doing the evil --, writing with my finger in the air, --, because that would be terribly entertaining, wouldn't it? Ron is in charge of the Department of Say What? Ron and Raleigh. Hey, Bob. How did old Dr. Ben learn about authority since he was raised by his grandmother? Oopsie. Yeah. And you know what? We are an hour and 40 minutes into the program this evening, and we haven't even gotten to the root of the problem and the actual cause of the death of Mr. Eric Garner. Only one person really has a complete understanding of why that happened. Rand Paul and that thing on his head. A note coming in from Carol, talking about my transgenerational argument at the beginning of the program. She says, if you kill enough young black men, you don't have to worry about so many old black men. And that's part of it. It was the same way that the Spartans operated with the Helots. Kill a few of the young. Everybody else fall in line. Carol also noting, I read every single page Bob McCulloch dumped from that Ferguson grand jury. There was no call. There was no audio talking about how did Darren Wilson know that there had been a robbery at the little store. There was no call. There was no audio. Ever notice when white people steal, it's shoplifting, and when a black kid does it, it's strong-arm robbery? Well, yeah. All you got to do is think back to Katrina for that one. Remember the one picture? And who was it? Was it Wolf Blitzer? Here we have some Negroes who are looting. Oh, look at those white people foraging for food. I'll never forget that. Addendum to the Ten Commandments by Carol. Thou shalt not kill. Asterisk. Some restrictions may apply. Please consult your skin color to know if murder is right for you. Jesus. And every one of these people is deemed to be an expert of some sort or another in the right wing. Every person you've heard from. They are looked to as authorities. And not one of them. Not one of them. Not one of them could survive for a minute outside the universe of their privilege. I want to thank folks, and I will get right on it right after the program. I want to thank folks for jumping in on the Wild Rice premium offer. They will be on their way to you. And for those of you who didn't catch the front end of the program, we have a rare opportunity. And that opportunity is to get your hands on a pound of hand-harvested from tribal lands wild rice from the Wisconsin North Country. It was offered to me to offer to you as a premium. You will be partaking of something produced in the same manner as it's been produced for 10,000 years. And for $100, we'll get that shipped to you straight away. I don't know how much of this there is. It won't be around for very long. And you will also be helping at the same time in the struggle to preserve the North Country of Wisconsin against a predatory hillbilly. Because it's the friend who is offering this is someone I met in the course of learning about that struggle. So the way it works, just use PayPal and send me your mailing address so that I can have it shipped to you. And thanks also going out this evening to David and to Glenn and to Michael. Michael ordered one of Tracy's books, so I will get that to her straight away as well. Thank you all very kindly for helping us in what will probably be a very difficult month in the long run. Thank you very much. And, you know, by all means, for those of you who ordered the wild rice or who do order it, enjoy. The way I was taught to make it, we use a little bacon, and in my case, chicken broth and some onion and some celery, and cook it together in a rice cooker. And oh my heavenly days! Yum, yum. So it's 14 minutes before the hour. We'll take a little break and come back to your calls. Remember, there are two separate phone lines. The Gizmo line is 304-663-4676, 304-663-HORN, H-O-R-N. And the other line, we'll just call it the other line, is 304-574-8178. We've got somebody on hold for that now. But it's Thursday, and that means we've got the Green News Report, and I hate to miss that. So by all means, stick around, because we've got some conversating to do, don't we? Yes, we most assuredly do. Because this is, after all, conversation radio. This is, in fact, The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Quiet. take that ride, cross this bloody river to the other side. 41 shots cut through the night. You're kneeling over his body in the vestibule, praying for his life. Well, is it a gun? Is it a knife? Is it a wallet? This is your life. It ain't no secret.
It ain't no secret.
It ain't no secret. No secret, my friend. You get killed just for living in your American skin.
41 shots. 41 shots. 41 shots. 41 shots.
41 shots. Lena gets her son ready for school. She says, on these streets, child, you've got to understand the rules. If an officer stops you, promise me you'll always be polite, and that you'll never ever run away. Promise mama you'll keep your hands inside. Well, is it a gun? Is it a knife? Is it a wallet? This is your life. It ain't no secret.
It ain't no secret.
It ain't no secret.
It ain't no secret.
No secret, my friend. You get killed just for living in your American skin.
41 shots. 41 shots. 41 shots. 41
just for living. You can get killed just for living. can get killed just for living your American skin.
It's Thursday, December 4, 2014.
The major energy producers are looking at the, you know, they're seeing the writing on the wall.
Germany's biggest utility spins off its fossil fuel assets.
Investment in fossil fuel is actually a high risk.
Are fossil fuel companies now running scared?
Florida has declared war on the sun, even as it still wants to be known as the Sunshine State.
Florida to punish homeowners for not polluting. Plus,
it's also a good time to remind that business is in partnership. There can be private and community relationships in giving back.
MSNBC's big infomercial for big coal.
All of those big stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
North Dakota is at the center of the nation's energy boom, and the growth is explosive.
Mika Brzezinski, when you're talking about fossil fuels, you sure you want to use the phrases boom and explosive? Just asking. This is your Green News Report. Boom. Okay, Desi Doyen, on this broadcast, I know we give a lot of grief to Fox News and the fossil fuel-loving right-wingers over there, but let's not overlook MSNBC. I mentioned Mika Brzezinski in the teaser there. That was from a 7-minute segment this morning, essentially singing the praises of big coal up in North Dakota and elsewhere and complimenting them on tearing up the ground, digging the coal, burning the poisonous toxins into the air, and then putting everything back exactly as it was.
That's the way to do it. If you can bring nature back, that's awesome.
That is awesome, bringing nature back.
Yeah, if only it were true.
Why were they doing this segment? I think they gave away the answer right here.
Caterpillar is the sponsor of our series and works closely with the mine company that you saw in that piece, by the way.
Oh, so they were paying for a 7-minute segment on Morning Joe.
Yes, praising big coal, a nice big infomercial.
Very nice of that liberal MSNBC to offer that to big coal, don't you think?
Uh-huh. But, you know, it's going in the opposite direction for the rest of the world. At the UN climate negotiations going on in Lima, Peru this week, the United Nations negotiators warned again that scientists say if we're going to have a chance of avoiding catastrophic global warming, then most of the world's fossil fuels have to stay in the ground unburned.
That's not going to sit well on MSNBC.
That means that those fossil fuel reserves are in danger of becoming worthless, what's known as stranded assets in the financial industry. United Nations climate chief Christiana Figueres also warned fossil fuels are really a high-risk investment.
The exploitation of oil is getting more and more expensive, whereas the technologies and renewable energies are getting actually cheaper and cheaper. So we do have, just from a financial and business perspective, a stronger case every day for renewables and a weaker case every time for fossils.
The risk of stranded assets is a growing realization among global institutional investors, like those tree-hugger hippies at the Bank of England, who announced this week they are doing a top-to-bottom review of all of their fossil fuel investments in light of the shift around the world to renewable energy. It's already underway in Germany, way ahead of the rest of the world in transitioning to low carbon. In an industry-shaking announcement this week, Germany's biggest utility, E.ON, said it is spinning off its fossil fuel assets into a separate company to protect its growing and profitable renewable energy assets from that exposure to fossil fuels.
In other words, they're realizing that fossil fuel is poison, financially and in other ways, and it may be hurting the rest of their business. On the broadcast on Pacifica Radio this week, we asked Dr. Michael Mann, climate scientist and creator of the infamous hockey stick graph, what this announcement from Germany's E.ON actually portends.
They've seen that the writing is on the wall. It isn't like this is a you know, environmentally driven company. Mm-hmm. This is a for-profit energy company that recognizes that they will not be profitable because of this new environment if they continue to invest in fossil fuel energy.
That common sense in the rest of the world still seems nowhere to be found in the U.S., or at least in Florida, where the state government has decided to punish people for not polluting. Florida's State Public Service Commission, which is supposed to look out for ratepayers, just approved an industry wish list of measures to gut Florida's energy efficiency standards and terminate its rebates for rooftop solar.
So the rest of the world is incentivizing clean energy. Florida is actually punishing taxpayers.
Exactly.
Brilliant Sunshine State. For much more on that story and the rest of the ones we covered, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please consider a donation to help the Green News Report stay on your public airwaves. For some reason, neither Fox, MSNBC, or Big Coal feel like sponsoring us. Download our reports anytime on iTunes. Find us and follow us on the Facebook and the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
It is exactly 8 p.m. here in the Eastern Standard Time Zone. And I say we go straight to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
And how are you doing tonight?
I'm pretty good. How about you?
Short, fat, cute, you know, the usual stuff.
Well, yeah, lucky you.
You asked a question, and I thought I would, since I've been listening all day to all the various and sundry outfits, apparently Mr. Gardner was largely guilty of, as they say on the streets, selling Lucy's, although he wasn't selling them that day. But he had been arrested a few times for doing that, and apparently that was quite sufficient to,
yeah,
I don't know.
It was, it was aroused.
Yeah, that's pretty much how it is. He made the great mistake of telling a cop no. And,
I think what really incensed the cops was when he said, "Don't touch me."
Well, yeah, that's basically it. I mean, and if I sound a little bit bitter about it, it's because I myself have gone through something similar. And went in to make the story short. By the time I went to court about it, I was charged with the interfering with the duties of a police officer who was smacking around somebody. And when I objected to it,
took you right
I
down.
Was arrested.
Absolutely.
I was arrested, and when it went through the whole court and all that yada, 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 the judge threw away most of the case, but he said, "I can't let you go because then that sets a precedent that our officers are to be disobeyed." So I had to pay a fine. But a lot of the other more onerous stuff was tossed out, but the message was very clear. The police are representatives of the ruling class, and you must obey them. Because they have a thing called disobeying a rightful authority.
A lawful order.
Uh huh.
See, that was not always the case in this country, though. Because in the military you have to obey a lawful order. Now, if a police officer says stop in the name of the law. Cowboy-like or whatever, you're well advised to stop because that's an indication that they are, you know, exercising their authority. But it used to be that if you didn't want to stop and salute on the street or something, you didn't have to. But shortly after September the 11th, 2001, the courts quietly decided that the police have the right to stop you and ask you for your ID anywhere, at any time, for any reason, regardless of whether or not you were engaged in any conduct that could be in any way construed as criminal.
Yeah, there's actually in several states now, there is a law in the books that's called failure to carry identification. If you just happen to walk out of the house and go to the grocery store, walking down the street, and you get pulled over, and if you don't have a driver's license or something that's going to declare who you are, you're in violation of the law, and they can arrest you and take you in for processing. And that's, you know, like you said, long before that obtained,
I always think of the infamous scene from that, and I thought it was an awful film, Porky's. Remember Porky's?
There's a scene where
the kids get pulled over in the car, and the cop says, "Pull you over because you got a light out." And the kid says, "We don't have a light out." And he takes his nightstick and crash, knocks out a headlight, and says, "Yeah, you do."
Mm-hmm.
It used to. I mean, the fertile field of expansion of the idea of probable cause came with the automobile. You know,
right.
Failing to, because if you get right down to it, the things that are actually laws that you have to do when driving are things that a lot of us don't do. You know, signaling for a lane change, making sure that all of your brake lights work, that your headlights are in proper working order, that you're not high beaming someone. And any one of these things can be probable cause to stop, and that opened up the barn door. Well, what happens now in interpersonal relationships is that barn door is flung open by not carrying your ID, by not being sufficiently obsequious to the police, by standing and photographing them. In other words, anything a cop does not like, he can charge you with resisting, obstructing, interfering. And that flings that barn door open wide.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's actually several departments that I can't off the top of my head cite them, but they've actually passed local laws that actually forbid the citizens from phone filming the police when they do their duties. And they get mighty, mighty upset about it when you, when you hold them to account. And there's a... one of the interesting wrinkles that's kind of appearing in the Gardner case is it came up a lot during the Ferguson issue, but it's been reinforced with the disinclination to pursue a more intense investigation of the police officers that killed Gardner in the grand jury process. People are really now, there's a long-winded conversation today on one of the little podcasts I listened to that, I mean, just went all out about the literally incestuous relationship that the prosecutors have with the various local police. You will not get a fair shake from any local official or any local prosecutor, even if he agrees with you, if it takes a chance of antagonizing or alienating those officers that he rubs elbows with all day long.
Right. And that's why I was gratified last night when I saw on MSNBC a couple of legal experts who were echoing something I had said a mere matter of hours earlier, to the effect that, you know, the problem is not all to be laid upon the doorstep of the police. The problem is compounded and magnified by the conduct of prosecutors. And the fact of the matter is, it is unreasonable to expect prosecutors to behave in any way except the way that they do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we need, on a state-by-state basis, you'd have to have enabling legislation, but we need a federal office of police prosecution. And those are for, and those are for prosecutors, or I don't know, maybe a state office, whatever. But in other words, ordinary county prosecutors don't get to prosecute the police that they supervise. Because that's what it boils down to. Prosecuting attorneys supervise the law enforcement.
Well, see, that's part, I mean, you know, let's go drag the old horse out and kick it around a couple of times, dead thing it may be. The original intent of the founders was to, the whole concept of checks between the balances of government was not just totally considered to the idea of a federal, but it was supposed to bleed down to the most local levels. The judiciary was supposed to ride herd on the law enforcement. Law enforcement.
Well, I mean, to be fair, at the time of the ratification of the Constitution, there really, to no significant degree, was any law enforcement.
Well, yeah, because for one thing, and maybe I'm getting on a little high horse here, but the very terminology that's used is where I have a problem. These are not security people. These are not public safety people, even though some of them now are calling themselves that. But they are referred to almost inclusively as law enforcement. Their task is to support whatever legal system that this society seems to have generated, and of course we've all gone through these conversations in the past about how corrupt the system is to begin with. It's almost entirely designed to protect the property rights of those, of the wealthy and the elite. And the law enforcement was established in many cases to keep society calm and stable so they can keep making their money and their property rights get observed. Now, I'm going a little off on a tangent there, but
I don't think you are at all, because what you're talking about is Charles Adams' economic theory of the Constitution, which Dr. Bill has covered at some considerable length and with which I happen to agree. The Constitution was born out of the desire of the framers of the Constitution to stem a growing tide of actual democracy that was happening inside the states. See, remember, prior to the passage of the 14th Amendment, the Constitution applied only to the federal government.
Yeah.
So individual states were free to do as they chose. And we're free to have a bicameral, tricameral, unicameral legislature, whatever, a chief executive, no chief executive, a judiciary that's housed in the legislature. You know, the sky was the limit in terms of what kind of governmental structure states could have.
Yeah, and you hear it all the time now. To sound kind of mean about it, but you got the wet dream of the right-wing conservative is to go back to full states' rights.
But by the same token, if I could, I'm disagreeing you not in substance but in degree. Whenever you hear a right winger talking about states' rights, at the end of the day, they're talking about their essentially racist natures.
Well, yeah, but the inevitable thrust is the same thing. You know, it's how you get to it. If they can, they want states' rights when the right benefits them. There's a young man that does I recently stumbled over a podcast that's on the Netroots thing, and there's a little fellow named David Waldman who talks about stuff like this a lot. And he refers to it, and I actually kind of like it. He calls it unitarianism. It's an attitude.
Wait, I've got to shorten my headphones, and I lost that. I got to have it again.
Well, I got a sucky phone too, but if he calls it give-me-tarianism.
I think we're going to be hanging on to that one.
And it's a attitude that give me mine, screw you. You know, I want rights, but once I got my stuff, I'm yanking the ladder up. You can't have it. Because if you come and get it, there's a belief that you're going to take from me and I'll have less. And it flows
right
through everything.
And it's a positively almost medieval view of the nature of life, insofar as everything is a zero-sum game. I think Carol alluded to this last night. It's the idea that there's only so much of a resource that there is to go around, and if you have some of it, that means I can't have as much as I want.
Right. It's like this Gardner issue. We referred to the fact that he was selling Lucy's cigarettes. Now this is me. Stop and think about it for a minute. This guy is selling loose cigarettes for 50 cents a pop out of a pack, which we at least for now will give him the tip of the balance and say that he acquired legally. He buys a pack of cigarettes, he pays the tax on them, but then because he chooses to go out and sell them individually, that's some huge crime.
That used to be entrepreneurialism. I mean, I saw all the background on that, and kind of had a fit because I was a young entrepreneur when I was in eighth grade. I would stop at the local convenience store, spend my lunch money on candy that came in individually packaged pieces. You know, Hershey's Kisses, Now and Laters, Laffy Taffy, that kind of stuff. Fill my pockets of my jacket with it, and then I would sell it at school.
Yeah.
And so, you know, a 20-cent package of now and later is turned into a buck.
Yeah. Well, what you just told me reminds me of an old friend I had back when I was growing up. He could not afford his marijuana buying it himself because he worked a regular dead-end job. And so he became a little bit of a drug dealer, and he did it only to the point of selling just enough to cover his own habit.
Right. If you go and buy a quarter pound and sell 3 ounces, you have an ounce for yourself, and right. You can go and buy them. And it's not that I know that because I've done it. I know that because I know people who did.
Yeah, that's basically me. I mean, I'm neither for or against it.
I knew this guy.
Yeah, I knew this fellow, as it were. Kind of the automatic disclaimer here, in case the NSA is listening. But
hi, Agent Fred. They are listening, you know.
Yeah, what's up, dude? But it's like
here. Yeah.
The great crime this guy committed, if you were to just take and peel all the bells and whistles off, was he was denying the state tax revenue. And that was such a fantastic and incredible and absolutely end of civilization crime that requires multiple cops to jump on you and wrestle you to the ground. And I know a lot of people who don't like to be manhandled.
And again, not to overwork the fact, but I'd seen the video. It didn't click with me until I saw it done in stills. Eric Garner had his hands up in the air.
Well, Bob, you know as well as I do that you put your hands in the air to mark the position between the hands where you're to shoot. You're helping the cops out. You got to get with the program, man. Hold the hands up in the air. The cop knows, shoot between the hands. That's how it works. Cops
Jesus.
Walk around, so many of them walk around, and they've been trained. They've been indoctrinated. It's like the little story you had earlier in the show about you're talking about guys who are in internal affairs who are supposed to be the guys watching the cops. And they are more crooked and more nasty and more evil than most of the guys that walk the beat. And that's the way they are. They've been taught, and it's like you see it all the time. I drive a truck. I drive down the highway. I watch a state trooper go by. There are laws against texting, using your mobile phone, and all that stuff. And I'm watching a trooper drive by who has the laptop open. He's thumbing on a smartphone. And his eyes are bouncing all over the place, and his car is weaving everywhere. But nobody will say a word to him because they live in this isolated bubble. We've got badges. Nobody can touch us.
Bingo.
And that is incredibly corruptive when you think about it. You have to have a very strong moral code not to let crap not to go to your head. Because you get pulled over, even if you're in a private vehicle and off duty, the cop pulls you over, you pull out your little wallet badge, and next thing you know, he's like, hey, dude, all right, yeah, okay, well, you know, keep it down because I'll get in trouble. Okay, cool. That's one of the reasons why these cops don't like are pushing back against these cameras, because those little things might be much harder to do.
Yeah, it will interfere with a long established culture. Because anybody who thinks that police culture is not a subculture, well, they're not living in the world.
Oh, exactly.
They're in a cave or a monastery somewhere.
Oh,
yeah, I was about to do the same thing. You go.
About a long time ago before I came out and decided to travel the country, I'll try to edit this a little bit for just informational purposes, but I was what they referred to as a body mover in one of the sundry states. I'll leave that state open to some suggestion when you hear how I describe it. A woman gets killed in the back of an apartment complex. She has a, shall we say, soiled reputation. The total amount of resources that are applied to her is one bored investigator who's basically just smoking a cigarette, standing around tapping his foot, waiting for me to show up. Now, later that same day, another woman is killed. But she happens to be killed in the back of a judge's house.
Oops.
And the short version of it is as we later found out, that it was a message being sent to the judge by sundry underworld figures. We'll leave it at that. But that event gets 7 police cruisers, 3 operating vans, 2 sets of guys like me, and, I mean, we're talking like there's got to be 30 people there. But the same event. Somebody died. And yet, because the one that died was not wealthy, was not of the proper skin color, whose life may not have been quite so squeaky clean, almost no resources. All that stuff you see on TV, CSI, none of that. I don't even think the guy took out a tape measure. The other one.
Well, is that kind of like what happened with Michael Brown, where the medical examiner shows up and he doesn't take any pictures because the battery was dead in his camera?
Well, yeah.
If that had been a man in a wealthy home, would his batteries have worked?
Not just a good Bob. Not even a question of batteries working. He would have had a spare. You can't tell me that, oh, my batteries don't work, and I guarantee bloody to you that battery is not something that you have to, like, bring in from the Starship Enterprise. Your batteries.
No, I am a nerd, and my camera takes a proprietary battery, but I got 2 of them, and I make sure that they both stay charged. And if one is discharged for lack of use for a while, the other one's good.
Yeah. And on top of that, this guy's a medical examiner. I guarantee bloody tea he's probably got one of the most advanced smartphones there is. You tell me he can't, in a pinch, pull out his damn smartphone and take a few pictures? No. There are cameras there. I've gone to scenes, I kid you not, I've gone to scenes where it all depends on who the victim is and where it occurred.
I don't doubt it.
That is all it is to it.
Okay. And round up, and not even so much as a round up the usual suspects.
Like I said, I did that for about a year and a half.
Right, we were talking about police culture, and all I was going to say is back in the day, back in the day of the old beat cop, and I guess, it was a form of corruption, but, the beat cop is there every day, and so he walks into the diner to cool his heels for a minute, and, the proprietor gives him a donut and a free cup of coffee.
Oh, yeah.
And says, it's nothing, man. You're taking care of our community. Go on your merry way. And so, he knows the places he can go and get that kind of treatment. And that's deemed a corrupt practice, and perhaps it is. But I would rather, but the guy lives in that community, and I would rather have that, I suppose, than a bunch of guys who don't live in the community who just get their jollies rousting people because they know they got priors. Because let's understand something about those police officers who surrounded Eric Garner. I've heard all kinds of different terms used to describe what happened there, but I have yet to hear anybody use the term cop riot, okay? Because what happened to Eric Garner was a cop riot. A gang of cops rioted on one dude.
Well, remember what happened? I think it was in L.A. They had this one, and I think you mentioned it maybe last week or something like that, where you got 5, 4, 5, 6 cops in this high-speed chase that dumped like 130, 140 rounds of ammunition into a car.
Yeah, that was Cleveland in 2012.
Yeah.
And they killed both people.
Yeah, and doubtful if they even lost a day's vacation.
No.
For these things. Because in this whole law enforcement culture that you talked about, the prosecutors, a lot of the lower level judges, they are part of that system. The judge is not going to be too harsh. He's going to believe what that cop says, even if that cop is standing or lying his rear end off. Because he knows darn well that if somebody comes after the judge, who's he going to call? He's going to call those very same cops to come save him.
Sure, if the law school curriculum has not changed a great deal, one of your first year, first semester courses is criminal law, okay? And so that's where you start learning, you know, the elements of larceny, the elements of murder, that kind of thing. How do you define, you know, how is rape defined in the law? What constitutes an arson? And you read cases in which those things are developed. Well, I had a terrible criminal law professor. Oh, he was just awful. But the one thing, and it was a true thing, that he said, I think on the very first day of class, he said, if you don't remember anything else out of this class, you will fail the class. But he said, if you don't remember anything else out of this class, and you fail out of law school and go your merry way and whatever, please remember one thing. Cops lie.
Oh, yeah. They lie on a constant basis.
And that, you know, some of them are doing it for malicious purposes. But, you know, it's part of police culture that, you know, the police don't arrest you unless you're guilty.
Right, and so if
there's a screw up somewhere along the way, well, you can cover it with a little lie in court, and everything will be okay, unless of course they get caught, right?
Sure. And you also have, I mean, and to kind of, you know, fade into the towards the end of, you know, fading our conversation out a little bit, but you not only have the level of just pure maliciousness that these guys have. The articles that you talked about with the text messaging and stuff. It's not just something that's there. They believe it in the bottom of their heart. I grew up with a friend whose father works for a federal law enforcement agency. Again, doing some editing here. And he refuses, at least up to the time that I last ever talked to the guy, his father refuses to go and take, even though it's a federal holiday and he gets it off for pay, he refuses to take that day of Martin Luther King Day off. He says, I'll go to work and I'll sit at the desk and twiddle my thumbs, but I will not give respect to that. And you can insert whatever words you want at the back end of that.
Well, we all know what the word is now, don't we?
Yeah, but it's, you know, it's ingrained in the culture. It's ingrained in my parents. Bless their pointy heads. They use the N-word constantly. And the one thing I can tip my hat to them a little bit is, for them, it wasn't malicious. It was just the way they talked. It was the way they grew up.
You raised something interesting, and it's a memory of mine. Because I'm 51, back when I started school, we didn't have compulsory kindergarten. So I didn't go. I guess my mother took care of most of the stuff that would be within the purview of that, because I was already reading by the time I got to first grade.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a very, very vivid memory of mine that I heard two words for the first time in my life on my very first day of first grade in Alabama. I saw other children being called that word. Because the schools had just been integrated, and you know, for me, for my generation growing up, starting school in the fall of 1969, integration was just the way life was. We had, you know, black kids and white kids together, and to a 6-year old, it seemed perfectly normal, except for the handful of cracker ass redneck children who insisted on calling the black children that word.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the same day that I saw black children being called that word, I got called a Yankee.
Mm-hmm.
I learned, and of course, you know, my only recourse was to go home and ask Mama, you know, Daddy was at work, go home and ask Mama. Mama, what's a, and Mama, what's a? And that has stayed with me to this day. You're right. Some of it is generational. You say, you know, your parents used it because that's just how it was. In my case, my parents didn't use the word, would not use the word. And later on, my father went ahead and explained to me. He said, I work every day on a furnace with black men and white men. He said, I used to go to work every day in coal mines with black men and white men. And he said, in the coal mines, we all came out equally black at the end of the day. And when a rock falls on you, you don't ask who the rock fell on, and the people don't stand around deciding whether or not a black man doesn't decide whether or not to help lift the rock off a white man and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
Because lives are in the balance. And he despised those words. And in point of fact, it separated, even though, West Virginia is below the Mason-Dixon line, but we sided with the Union when we separated from Virginia and were made a state on June 20th, 1863.
Yeah. Well, I was born in West Virginia.
My parents were forever separated from their Alabama neighbors for the entire time they lived down there. If you were born in Southwest Virginia, then you know darn good and well.
Yeah, you know where Parrishburg is?
Yeah, oh, sure.
Yeah, well, I was born in that town. And you know darn well the way the attitudes are down in that part of the world. And it persists to this very day. And, of course, it's not a popular belief, but I truly believe that there is an active civil war in this country right now. But it's what I call a modern war. It's a war of persuasion, a war of politics, a war of culture, a war of economics. We've learned, I guess, in some ways, not to go out and just mow everybody down with armies. But the hatred, the Southern Confederate right-wing wackosphere if you look at it, it's almost the demarcation line is the urban populations, which are usually more younger, are moving into the new century, and then your rural populations that are mostly older and more set in their ways, and a lot of people that still harken back to that fake time in the 1950s that they saw on TV that never really existed, but they saw it on TV and that's how it was supposed to be, that, the wise, benevolent guy went to work, the mama stayed home, and there wasn't a dark-skinned person to be seen except for the one neighbor down the street who made cookies. That was it. They grew up that way.
Yeah. No, well, to be quite fair, one of my great grandmothers was about as nasty a racist human being as has ever drawn breath. And there's and there is a story that I'm simply not going to tell. It's just too hateful and too mean.
Oh yeah, I won't suspect that your grandmother and one of my grandmothers would probably be rocking chair buddies.
Yeah, well, this was my great grandmother.
Yeah,
this was the grandmother
like that.
This was the mother. This was the mother of my grandfather.
Right, I have a grandmother. She's since passed, but she lived up in the mountain. They just called it the mountain. It was one of those pieces of property that was homesteaded back before the United States became the United States. And so that was the only way she was able to keep it, of course, with today's tax system. It had to be a homesteaded property. But, she complained to the United States Postal Service back in the 80s, when a new mail carrier. Now, she didn't get the letters at her house. She had to get the letters in a mailbox that was down at the bottom of the mountain. But she had to come down the mountain one day to get her mail, and here come the guy pulls up in the mail truck, and he was one of those people. He called the United States Postal Service and raised absolute holy hell. Why you got one of those delivering my mail? Now I can't even open my mail up because he's.
Oh, see, that's why. By the way, I mentioned a couple of nights ago the interview that Chris Rock recently gave. And it's an interesting interview to read. It turns out, he said my mother had to go. He's talking about his mother's generation, and I guess his mother herself. He said had to go to the veterinarian's office to get a tooth pulled, and had to go in the back door because if black folks were seen going in the front door, then white people wouldn't bring their dogs there to get worked on. This was, of course, South Carolina. And now, now naturally, the white wingers are having hissies on Chris Rock.
Yeah, of course, because you know the minute the truth comes out, it makes their statements a lie, and then they got to make more noise to try to drown out the truth. That you played something about Mike Huckabee, or was it you or one of the other podcasts?
Yeah, that was me. That was a little bit. That was earlier this year.
What you talk about hockey pucks and stuff. No, I have to go back to the store and buy new hockey pucks. Thank you very much. Because I chewed through the ones over there.
They just don't make them like they used to.
No, because but here's the thing, and this is the thing that so amazes me is that. I truly believe that sometimes I think they can't hear their own words. They don't go home and look in the mirror and say, what did I just say today? But they do it with the teeth in the mouth, bare face hanging out. And, you know, and what scares me is this guy has a TV show. He's got a platform to jabber off of. When by all rights and all good sense and common courtesy and civilization, he should have been run out of town on a rail. And that's, to me, a great, great travesty and great crime. You know, because, you know, I think, and I've talked to a couple people today about one because of all the new riots in New York. And a young woman passing through the restaurant, listening, you know, catching part of the conversation, and this one guy said something really out of it, and I'll end our conversation here with this little piece. She looked at the guy as he walked by, and she kind of stopped and listened to his little rant for a second, and she walked up to him, and right with everything, and of course, she was a very attractive girl, so that kind of stopped everybody right there, and they're all looking at her, and she leaned in close to the guy and whispered real loud, near his face, but not quite in his ear, but loud enough we all hear. He said, thank God you're about to die. And to me, that was like, bam. Because that's basically what's going to happen. These guys were basically the only way this is going to change is when this generation, this last hanging on, grasping at the straws, people die off. And the younger generations, the more intelligent, the more educated, can get to step in, what they call millennials, I guess they call it now, the world hopefully will change much for the better. Because I don't hear this kind of stuff.
But that's all we got is hope. That's all we got is hope. Some of it kind of makes you despair. But no, I get your point.
Yeah. Well, it was a pleasing conversation, and there may be somebody else waiting for it, so let me jump off for your time left, and have a good night.
Well, all right, you too. Jump right in anytime. You are more than welcome.
Thanks.
Uh-huh. Bye now. And, that means that the other line, 304-574-8178, 304-574-8178 is open, and in the meantime, we will go, yea, verily, unto the gizmo line. What's happening? Hello? You're on the air. I hear you. I know we're connected.
Bob.
There you are. Bill.
You're not coming through.
Hey, Bill. What's happening? Oh, wait a minute. Okay, something. Hold on.
You're not coming through.
I can't
hear you at all.
Well, then we're having gizmo line problems.
I can't hear you, Bob.
All right. Well, that's strange, because I was hearing Bill just fine. Let me make sure of something here. All right, here's another line. Here's another gizmo line call. Hey, welcome to the program.
What's up, Bob?
Okay, so you hear me, Jim?
Yeah, I hear you fine.
Okay.
Clear.
Okay. Bill could.
You're like walking on water and swimming on land, and
turning weed into marijuana and sugar into cocaine.
Wow, I'm something.
That's a King Missile line. No, this is real interesting what you're talking about. Let me turn down my radio. Hold on.
Okay.
My computer. Okay, good. No, you know, that was a great Bob rant. In almost 2 hours.
Yeah, what was that? It was a darn near 2 hour filibuster.
Yeah. I kind of made some notes. But, I'm a couple years, now 2 or 3 years older than you. I thought racism would be over by now. I don't know. Of course, I thought after Carter was elected that, you know, everything was, you know, people would kind of catch a clue, but they, you know, you still got poor working people voting for Republicans, mostly white. It just doesn't seem to change. You know, it's kind of depressing. But, what that woman was saying, entitlement? Okay, let's stop entitlements like inheritance, okay?
Well, there's that, isn't there?
Huh?
There's that, isn't there? Oh, but no, that's a constitutional right. That's not an entitlement. That's well, something that's been handed down from Sinai by God Almighty.
That's my atheist cackle. But I mean, the way she was talking, entitlements, and it's like, I'm thinking, you don't even, I was born entitled in a plethora of ways, I realize now, you know, and then like the 60s bullshit, and then women's lib, and why doesn't she just go back to the, what I was thinking was, why didn't she just go back to the 19th century and see how women lived and, see how she liked, how she would like it lived in, 19th century or 18th century times. Or even, you know, take the United States. Women didn't get to vote to what, 1920?
There you go.
And so if that were to carry through till today, since she's kind of harking back to the great old days, if things were remained the same, she would not have her 6, maybe 7-figure job, you know?
Yeah.
You know, that just kind of irritates me, you know, when I see that.
Well, but I mean, in a way, be grateful for them, Jim, because what you're seeing out of that is the absolute blindness to privilege that infects most white people.
I see it in my family, Bob. I know what you mean now. It's incredible. It's like, did I tell you, did I tell Mike, you know, I listened to both of y'all, big surprise. We had like 9 adults. It was like a dinner for a birthday for my mother, and out of the blue, towards the end of the dinner, my younger sister says, "Well," and I don't know. It's kind of weird because I don't know if you can tell, just because I listen to you and Malloy, that I'm kind of lefty, and anyway, out of 9 out of 10, but she said, "Well, who are going to support for president?" But she's talking about Republican stuff, and I'm thinking, you don't even know your DNA. I mean, you don't even know who put food on your table, who sent you to school, and then when the desegregation in Louisiana started, which is around, like you said, I think it's 69, 70.
I don't know if I was the first integrated class, but pretty close.
Yeah, well, I remember, because I remember going to going to Bienville Elementary School, all whites, and I remember my first grade teacher's name, Mrs. Lynn, and but anyway, but she, not Mrs. Lynn, but in fifth, you know, then there was a girl who was the first black girl. I didn't think anything of it. And then, but when desegregation really hit in sixth grade, after the first brain surgery, my first brain surgery, it went to all of a sudden almost 50-50. I mean, there was a lot of white flight from the schools, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I continued to go. I finished. And then my mother, she had my two sisters, she put them into Catholic school as well as my brothers. And I'm a proud public school graduate. And the thing is, you know, Catholic schools, one of the great things they have is they can decide who goes to their school, plus you have to have the money.
Right.
So if you can control who's coming in, you can, you know, if you don't pass a certain test, you don't get in. So that makes it a lot better right off the bat. Plus, if these people tend to have money, which 99.9% of the time they do, you have a lot more, for lack of a better word, technologies or access to a lot more vehicles to improve your education than the average person.
Sure. Without a doubt.
So, you know, that's just kind of, to me it's so obvious, but I guess people don't want to see, obviously they don't want to see truth. It's just like listening to your favorite former governor, Fox News host, whatever that
is. Oh, Pastor Brother, Reverend Governor Huckstervey?
that nitwit.
Yeah, well, I left out nitwit.
Yeah. Maybe I'm just too enlightened or just too fair-minded or just naive. But, you know, anybody could ever vote for him for anything. I don't know. And, well, that's just about any Republican. But he just... they just come up with that crap, and people believe it because they want to believe it. It's just like the quote-unquote welfare recipients. You know, I'm just using a stereotype. But Republicans are going to cut their welfare or their
Ghana,
to vote for them.
You know, Ghana, food stamps have already been slashed.
Yeah, but they'll still vote for them. Right?
Oh, sure, and then, you know, what follows from that is some poor liberal will say, I don't understand why these people vote against their own interests. And I have to kick furniture some more, because there's an inherent snobbery in that that is just, I can't, wow. Because the thing is, that's somebody defining for somebody else what somebody else's damned interests are. You know, we need to come to grips with some things as liberals, progressives, whatever we care to call ourselves.
Left-wingers, that's me.
Okay, yeah, we need to come to grips with some things. People who we describe as voting against their own interests, they're not doing that. Their interests are in fetuses, and their interests are in guns, and their interests are in faith. Okay? Look, let's just come to terms, Jim, with the fact that there is a segment of this society that would rather starve to goddamn death if we can just save the fetuses and set up a theocracy. Okay? As long as they get their guns. Okay? They're not voting against their own interests. They are going to the polls, and they are voting fervently, stridently, for their own interests. It's just that we can't understand why those are their interests, and we have not done any kind of a halfway decent job of explaining why that's a hell of an interesting interest to have. You know, look, Joe Hill said, live on hay day by day, pray and pray, there'll be pie in the sky when you die. There's a whole bunch, of my, Scots-Irish, you know, co-religionists or, co-ethnics, whatever we want to call it, who have 400, 500, 600 years, Jim, of not having enough to eat, not owning any land, being always answerable to someone else. So if they finally get to a point where they're free to go to whatever freak-ass church they want to and get to keep a gun on the mantelpiece in case the Yankees come through, well, by God, that's more than they had in the last 600 years. I mean, why is that so hard for us to comprehend?
Yeah. No, I guess it's kind of like, I got mine, F you.
Well, I mean, some of it is, but some of it's, I don't need, I mean, look, I'm not making fun of anybody when I talk about the fact that I can go out on any given day and drive down the four-lane highway through Fayetteville and Oak Hill and over toward Beckley, and I can see some rusted-out two-wheel drive pickup truck that's probably about 18 years old, and by God, it's got a McCain Palin sticker still in the back window, right next to a Friends of Coal sticker. I'm not being elitist. I'm not being a snob. I'm not saying I'm better than them. I'm saying that I actually kind of understand why it's there.
Yeah, I understand with my family. My family's part, I call it religiosity to some extent, and I don't know, self-aggrandizement, you know, because, I mean, granted, they've worked hard, they've done things, but despite, you know, in addition to my own personal experience with, the things that the Palestinian day labor threw down on me, made my life a lot more difficult than they can ever imagine. All four of them combined versus me, what I went through with that, and it wasn't just two surgeries, brain surgeries, it was the aftermath to throw in a Rolling Stones line. Dyslexic, the epilepsy, and the peripheral blindness that kind of, I can still see straight ahead, but I can't drive. And then that screws up employability a lot, you know. And it just social relationships do. That's just the way the world is. That's the roll of the dice. But they don't seem to understand it. It's kind of like what color skin you come born with. It's like with people, and I voted for Obama twice. I could care less who his parents had sex with, because that's basically what that determines what color you are, or shade. You know, like you and I are both fair skinned. I'm German, English, Scotch, Irish.
God damn near translucent I am, but you know.
I'm a little bit dark, but when I was living in Vegas, I couldn't just like lay out by the pool for 2 or 3 hours without some sunblock. It's just, I don't understand. Well, I understand, because it goes back to the 1%. Everybody wants to be the 1%. And I'm going to skip around, but it's like, sorry, suckers, that 1%'s already been pretty much closed. I don't think they're opening up any new seats to that, do you?
No. No.
So I can cancel my reservation, damn it.
You had a reservation?
Well, I bought it from a reputable dealer. He swore to Jesus, the baby Jesus.
Right, yeah. And you bought your satellite falling from the earth onto your house insurance from a fine, upstanding Christian insurance salesman too, didn't you? That's where I bought my asteroid insurance.
Let me tell this story real quick. When I was 21, I ended up taking this job for this insurance company. It was a, what they called industrial insurance. And the guy, I go, sorry, I go to this company, I apply, I get the job, and they're all, so this guy, he's, one guy is leaving, he's retiring, and this new guy, his name was, I'm sure he's dead now, doesn't matter, but his name was Wright Goolsby. And he kind of, we'd go for, you know, just kind of shows me, the, you know, the ropes, i.e. collecting payments from poor people, because that's basically what that insurance was geared toward. That's all it was geared for. Funeral insurance, a tiny life insurance, and crappy little fire insurance thing, a couple other things. But anyway, at the end of the day, he's like, he's dropping me off, and he's like, yeah, I said, Jim? I said something that kind of sparked his interest, and I was a Buddhist back then. He was, Jim, what do you think happens when you die? Which I thought was so weird. But I kind of sensed, this wasn't the time to sprout my Buddhist philosophy on him. So I just said, well, right. And it's Wright Goolsby, what a name. You could not think of a better name to fit this guy. And he said, well, right. I think you kind of have another life. His eyes lit up. He's like, you mean born again? I said, well, this is going to be my boss or my superior. So I just, yeah, whatever.
Like, so then, yeah. Washed in the blood, you betcha, sure. What?
Right. So then he's like, so, come here, I got some for you. So he gave me like a little pocket copy of the New Testament. This is 1980. This is before, this is September 1980. This is before the Reagan debacle of the country started. But, so he takes out his little copy of the New Testament. Goes, okay, Jim, what's your birthday? And then on that date, it was like September, let's say September 6th. That was my born again day. I had my birthday and my born again day. And it was just kind of, you know, I worked there, I don't know, 6 months or whatever, but it was just, you know, he thought he got a new soul, but he just, that kind of thinking just, led me over to the Bob side, the dark side, the Bob Kincaid / boy side.
Hey, Jim, you have yourself a good evening. Thanksgiving go okay?
Well?
I said you have a good evening.
Yeah, it went great. It was, fantastic,
Wonderful. All right, well, you have yourself a good evening.
I did have a little food porn. I did have a couple of raw oysters. Before, and then we had the oyster stuffing.
Oh, you're a hard-hearted man to bring that up on an evening like this. But then again, I had deer tenderloin for dinner, so there.
All right, well, I'm a noodle bat. You know, after meals, pretty good, too, so spicy one.
All right, you take care, Jim. Have a good night.
All right.
Bye now. Our buddy Jim Cullen from Louisiana Stan. It is time to get out of here. Thanks to those of you who ordered your pounds of your pounds of wild rice. I'll get after that as soon as the program ends. Thank you to all of you who helped kick in to keep this all going this evening. Thank you to David and Michael and Glenn and Carol and Philip and Rob. There will be a Hooterville Holler gift basket on the way to Rob, and we'll be seeing about getting a book, one of Tracy's books, to Michael. Thank you, one and all. Quick note before we leave, we'll give Philip the last word. Philip wrote a little bit ago in regard to Mr. Eric Garner, since nobody seems to be willing to afford him that much respect. Until yesterday, Philip writes, I looked at the video of Eric Garner with horror. I had been rousted by the police several times during my teenage and early adult years. Even worse, I have severe asthma, and thanks to the wonders of 20 years of dependency on steroids, have been living large like Mr. Garner, so to speak. So I know what a chokehold and compression of my airways by those committed to protecting and serving would do to me. For starters, I wouldn't be writing this message. As so many on the right denounce Michael Brown and Eric Garner as thugs who would have run afoul of the police one day, the Bush-like policy of preemptive crime prevention now being employed by our militarized police, apparently being the favorite methodology of crime prevention used to control African-American males. I wonder how I would react if one of my children or family members was killed for walking down the street or for selling loose cigarettes. Or rather, I wondered that until yesterday. Thanks to the Garner grand jury, I have seen the light. No cop was responsible for Mr. Garner's death. Rather, he should have known that cigarettes kill. An obvious warning on a legal pack of cigarettes that he obviously ignored. Now that I have such wisdom, life is so much easier, and I'm ready for a year of Fox News. For some reason, as I write this, I, like Hugo Chavez at the United Nations, smell sulfur. Be well. Signed, Philip. Philip, you be well as well. Thank you for that. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, the hardest working, bravest people I know. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.